Greetings. I'm Captain Kevin Smith, and this is Throttle Up, a radio show and podcast dedicated to the proposition that critical thinking, when employed, can dramatically improve performance in whatever we are doing, enable us to solve problems that others avoid, equip us to become thought leaders instead of followers, and provide us with the intellectual resources and moral courage to support and defend America and its Constitution. Our motto is clarify, reason, win. That is, clarify the actual, employ analytic reason, and achieve mission success. Our website, throttleupradio.com, that has all kinds of information. Also, our podcast is located there, as well as iTunes. And of course, we have a blog, so please visit our website. Our support staff, Evergroove Studios for audio engineering services. They are located in Evergreen, Colorado, and Reflections Printing for multimedia support, and they are located in St. George, Utah. Our book is Critical Thinking Essentials, Quick Reference Handbook. It is available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. Our broadcast time on Red State Talk Radio, we are on the weekends, both Saturday and Sunday, on the main channel, that's at 7 p.m., and the Encore channel, that's at 6 p.m. All right, so welcome back to another Throttle Up. We are in the midst of a presidential election, which we do every 4 years, and this is the time for the 2020 election. Now, as I record this, this is Wednesday, so the presidential election for the year 2020 occurred yesterday, and we still do not know the outcome. The outcome is being, I guess you could say the whole situation is profoundly confusing. Most of the confusion comes in the form of what we call remote voting. Remote voting is, it goes by another term. It's called mail-in ballots. And so if you don't show up in person and prove your identity at the official voting place that is established, there is another way of doing it. We used to have absentee balloting, of course, and that was done for the small percentage of people that could actually, that were not able to show up and vote. And most of those were members of the military on deployment. And so the absentee ballot was something that was solicited. It was not an unsolicited ballot. You were not sent out a mail voter package unless you had requested an absentee ballot through the official channels. Now, that whole situation changed with this coronavirus pandemic that threw into the mix a whole a different set of issues and problems and concerns and difficulties. It does appear to me, from what I can see, is that most states were simply not prepared to deal with a large percentage, well, not, I guess you could say, a bigger percentage of mail-in ballots than they would ordinarily have in normal times. And so this is an election that was conducted under unusual times and non-normal times, under adverse conditions. And so our ability to respond to that tested our foundations of democracy. All right, so so that's what's going on right now as we speak. The situation is pretty much up in the air. If you consider the situation, if you look at the big three as I speak, the big three would be Florida, Ohio, and Texas. If you look at that, Trump has won all three in a rather decisive way, and that often will propel a candidate to victory. But there's all kinds of questionable things going on, and the ability to count votes that were not done in person apparently is stressing the system of many, many states. And that is leading to this level of uncertainty. Now, one of the things that I kind of think that we need to consider some of these things from a critical thinking standpoint. The first order of business would be finality, which is, okay, at what point do we declare that the campaign is over and the voting has been completed? At what point? We don't keep moving the goalpost further down the road. We come up with something, and it usually is that we stop voting at 7 p.m. on election day, and that's it. There may be some additional efforts underway for absentee ballots, but in most cases, those would actually not be counted in the total unless the election was particularly close. Okay, so finality is in fact a big issue here. And there has been all kinds of things done across the board. And this applies, I think, primarily in some of the states that are democratically controlled, which means that states that are controlled by the Democrats, there's been all kinds of efforts to change the arrival dates, to move the days by which we then declare the voting count is complete in Pennsylvania. That day now has been extended until Friday, and so it went from Tuesday, so Wednesday, three additional days to complete the counting of it, of those states. And of course, there's other things going on in terms of post-election counting of votes that were not cast in person. So these are remotely cast. Now, the first question that I have concerning this is, okay, how do you verify that the person who claims to be the voter is, in fact, actually the voter? So you cannot check the ID against the face of the voter, against the documented information that the voting officials have, as well as the address is another verification item that is used as well. And so here you have a situation where it is easier to fool the system. There could be some sophisticated efforts underway in which you could fool the system. You could present fake information masquerading as truthful information or accurate information. And there could be a whole list of things by which you could generate inaccurate voter information or inaccurate voting information. And that's a particular concern that a lot of people have expressed. All right, so let me cover the situation as it occurs right now. Now, this is a moving target, and things are changing very, very rapidly. When I get done with this recording, there will be another press conference from the White House, and so I'm going to be listening to that. Anyway, so I have some information so the voting technically stopped yesterday at 7 p.m. Pacific. All right. At about 1 and 7, so that'd be, 10 p.m.? So at about 1 p.m., 1 a.m., rather, 1 a.m., and so let's round it off and just say, okay, so approximately midnight of the day of voting, what did the situation look like at that particular time? And I have some numbers, rather fascinating numbers, I think, that indicates what was the situation at about midnight of the election day, which was November 3rd, 2020. Okay. At that time, Pennsylvania was 57% Trump to 41% Biden. Georgia was 52% Trump to 46% Biden. Michigan was 52% Trump to 43% Biden. North Carolina was 51% Trump to 48% Biden. And Wisconsin was 55% Trump to 43% Biden. Okay, now you can say, all right, Kevin, what exactly does that mean? All right, was all the votes counted? No, all the votes were not counted, but typically they would be the evening of a very late evening of an election, as it has occurred over time and time again, usually the late evening of the election, where the winner is announced, and concession speeches are also given. And the winner at that time holds a victory party, usually about 11 p.m. Of the night of the election. And this did not happen. But about that time, now the answer, the big question here is that, okay, so why didn't this whole thing end? Okay, and you can say, well, Kevin, that's pretty obvious why it didn't end. But no, let's look at it. Why didn't it end and the winners announced later on that evening, or at the very latest, early the next morning? That's how votes are typically counted. Okay. And the answer is that, well, we had a whole bunch of mail-in ballots that had to be counted that have shown up. And we have not completed counting all of the mail-in ballots. Okay, so, all right, why have we not completed the counting? Did we not hire enough people to do the counting? Was the process... Okay, and I just got something that came across that said that Trump has won Wisconsin. Let me check that. No, that says that Biden wins Wisconsin. Okay. Okay, so let's continue with my discussion here. Things are changing rapidly, and there's going to be all kinds of jockeying back and forth over the next few days and even longer than that. Okay, so let's see what sense we can make out of this situation that we are confronting. Okay, so here we have a national election that is affected by, it is stressed by certain unforeseen things, certain external factors, and unexpected events. And so we have a situation in which the outcome of an election has been drawn out. We don't have the systems in place in most states, and that's true. Not true of all states. Some states were well prepared for this coronavirus thing. They had staffed up. They had gotten the resources. They had done their proper planning and execution, and they were able to handle the increased volume of mail-in voting rather well. But some states did not. And so that seems to be the problem. And anytime you have the conclusions being delayed, that leads to all kinds of possible improper actions, and it gives those who wish to do so the opportunity to inappropriately influence elections. An example of that would be some of the key Democratic control states. All three of them stopped counting today for some reason. It wasn't really a very good reason given as far as I could tell. And one of them was Pennsylvania. And so they actually stopped counting. And other states have magically come up with an additional large block of votes for Joe Biden. Anyway, so it gives you pause and concern that things are not going away, not going on properly, and not proceeding in some kind of a way that, you know, that we have a trusted system. We in order to sustain a democracy, we have to have a system in place that is fair and objective. We have to have a system in place where we can say that the trust and confidence that we have in this electoral system, this system that we have in place in this democracy to elect our public officials, we have to have a system in place that is trustworthy. It is viable. It is established such that outside influences and manipulations are almost impossible. There are all kinds of firewalls in place to prevent bad actors from coming in and trying to falsify or disrupt the objective data, try to corrupt the data, try to alter voting patterns and all kinds of things. And so this trusted system that we have in place needs to be well established such that, you know, and that ought to be one of the things that, you know, that ought to be discussed, which has not been discussed up to this point, which is, you know, we hear things like, okay, you know, every vote counts, every legal vote counts, and all of that stuff, and certainly that is true, and that ought to be one of the criteria in which we establish a system in which everyone can vote, everyone is expected to vote, every vote that is cast legally is cherished. And that has to do with our emphasis on individual freedom, individual liberty. But there is another side to that, which is not getting a lot of good press. It's not really being talked about in a lot of places, and there are some exceptions to this. But the other key aspect of that is that we also need to have a system in place that we trust, that will give us factual, accurate, unbiased information that's tamper-proof. We cannot tamper or alter the results of the election because we have established a system that is highly trustworthy. It has lots and lots of systems in place and backup systems in place, all kinds of verification systems and security systems and validation systems. And we can do that. We have the technology. We have the brain power. We can design a system that is almost impossible for anyone to enter the system and to alter viable, accurate, and objective information. What is it that we need? And one of the things is that if we have a trend line going and we can make some adjustments to the trend line, but if the trend line is going, then we need to consider such a trend line as well. And we need to look at what are the extremes? What is the possible outcomes given the extreme events? And is it likely, for example, for a single candidate at the very end of an election, state election, a candidate to automatically receive an additional 100,000 votes? Is that plausible? And I would say that if it at some point we should be asking ourselves at what line is it no longer credible that something is being proposed, that something is being asserted, that a number is being added to one column or another. At what point do we say that does not pass the smell test? That does not seem to me to be entirely credible. If we have a trend line going in key states like North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada, Wisconsin, Arizona, and Minnesota, if we have trend lines going, then what is going to alter those trend lines? What is it? Is it credible to imagine that these trend lines could be significantly altered? And so, when you say, "All right, well, we have some data that some of the mail-in ballots were heavily Democratic," and I don't know if that's true or not. Why that would be true, I'm not sure. There was early voting in a lot of places across the country. I know that I voted early as well. And so, okay, well, that's something to ponder. Now, as we continue our discussion, I'm going to segue into a little bit a different kind of discussion right after this short break. Okay, we're back. Now, I want to segue a little bit into a audio clip of Tucker Carlson. This is about 5 minutes long. And it is kind of, well, it's related to this discussion. And it of course, is politically oriented. That is something that we don't normally do on this show. This is mostly a non-political show about critical thinking and other things related to it. But this is a great, I think on a number of levels, this audio clip is, I think, particularly interesting. This was recorded yesterday, and it was on the Tucker Carlson show, and the title of it is "Trump is an indictment of America's ruling class," and as we listen to this, I want you to, Tucker asked us to consider two very, very important questions. Why is this happening? And this gets to the heart of what it means to be a critical thinker. And you don't really have to go down the political road at all. You can if you want to, and that's perfectly fine. But this gets to the heart of what it means to be a critical thinker. And when you ask the question, why is this happening? How is it that this thing has come about? Not what it is, but why is it here? Why did this happen? Why is this occurring in our place and in this time? All right, so I want you to listen to this. Good stuff.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. We are just hours away from the national election, and suddenly there is so much going on, so much news, it is impossible to metabolize. claims and slogans and rumors coming in from every direction. Been online recently, checked your phone. It's overwhelming. We're going to have the very latest news throughout the hour tonight. We want to begin a different way. We want to begin this show with a single image. Now, the image doesn't tell you who's going to win or lose tomorrow. Instead, it's a metaphor for the election itself and for the moment that we're living in and will continue to live in. The picture is from a town called Butler, Pennsylvania. It's 35 miles north of Pittsburgh. The president held a rally there over the weekend. Butler's like a lot of places you'll find in this country once you head inland from the coasts. It's a former industrial town. They made Pullman rail cars there for many years. But it's been losing population for decades. There's still a lot of nice people in Butler. For 60 grand, you can buy a decent house there. It's a place you might be happy in. But our professional class is not impressed by Butler. They don't consider Butler, Pennsylvania, or places like it, the future. To them, places like Butler are embarrassing relics of a past best forgotten. The men of Butler may have built this country, and they did, but they mean nothing to our leaders now. You can be certain of that because when large numbers of people in Butler started killing themselves with narcotics, no one in Washington or New York or Los Angeles said a word about it. And so it continued. There have now been so many opioid deaths in Butler that a few years ago, residents built an overdose memorial in the middle of town. MSNBC didn't cover that. So given all of that, it was interesting how the people around Butler feel about Donald Trump. Here are the pictures of the president's rally there on Saturday night. Tens of thousands of people came. So many people that the crowd obscured the horizon. It looked like a visit from the Pope. When was the last time a political speech drew that many people? Well, the media didn't ask. Instead, they attacked the rally as a super spreader event. Trump endangers thousands in Pennsylvania. Okay, we'll leave the epidemiology to CNN. But the question still hung in the air. Why did all those people come? Why? They must have known that Donald Trump is the most evil man who's ever lived. They've heard that every day for 5 years. They know that people who support Donald Trump are also evil. They're bigots, they're morons, they're racist cult members. They know that Americans have been fired from their jobs for supporting Donald Trump. Not to mention kicked off social media, belittled by their kids' teachers, shunned by decent society. Only losers and freaks support Donald Trump. People in Butler knew all of that. But on Saturday, they went to the Donald Trump rally anyway. Why exactly did they do that? We should be pondering that question deeply as we watch tomorrow's returns and as we live through the aftermath of them. Millions of Americans sincerely love Donald Trump. They love him in spite of everything they've heard. They love him often in spite of himself. They're not deluded. They know exactly who Trump is. They love him anyway. They love Donald Trump because no one else loves them. The country they built, the country their ancestors fought for over hundreds of years, has left them to die in their unfashionable little towns, mocked and despised by the sneering halfwits with finance degrees but no actual skills who seem to run everything all of a sudden. Whatever Donald Trump's faults, he is better than the rest of the people in charge. At least he doesn't hate them for their weakness. Donald Trump, in other words, is and has always been a living indictment of the people who run this country. That was true 4 years ago when Trump came out of nowhere to win the presidency. And it's every bit as true right now, maybe even more true than it's ever been. And it will remain true regardless of whether Donald Trump wins re-election. Trump rose because they failed. It's as simple as that. If the people in charge had done a halfway decent job with the country they inherited, if they'd cared about anything other than themselves, even for just a moment, Donald Trump would still be hosting Celebrity Apprentice. But they didn't. Instead, they were incompetent and narcissistic and cruel and relentlessly dishonest. They wrecked what they didn't build. They lied about it. They hurt anyone who told the truth about what they were doing. That's true. We watched. America is still a great country, the best in the world, but our ruling class is disgusting. A vote for Trump is a vote against them. That's what's going on in that picture. That's what's going on in this country.
Okay, so, yes, it certainly is a political statement as well. But what I'd like to do here is to consider a couple of things that that Tucker Carlson said. He said, why is this? Why is this happening? And of course, this is related to this this Trump rally in Pennsylvania a couple of days ago, where 57,000 shows up, people show up. It's the largest political rally I think ever recorded, maybe in the history. I don't know. But when you look at the pictures, you're overwhelmed with the size of this crowd that, as far as I can tell, it represents the average American. It represents the person who is a citizen of this country, an American citizen, a worker, a family member, maybe whole families. This is the what I would consider to be the heart and soul of America, these people. And I meet them when I go out to the various venues, when I do speaking engagements, and when I do author events at bookstores. They tend to be a great deal more than just book signing events, because there's lots of discussions going on between me and the customers coming into the bookstores. I meet these people, and I'm constantly amazed how amazing, how good, how interesting, how accomplished they are. Instead of constantly complaining about such things as climate change, such things as income inequality, such things as racism and stuff like that. And we get bombarded with that all the time. We are constantly bombarded with the accusations that something is wrong with this country, something is wrong with us, something is wrong with this thing that we call liberty and democracy, something is wrong with it, and it's producing negative results, and therefore, by extension, there is something wrong with you and me. And instead of that, I see that the people I meet, I see all of them as great people. There's nothing. I'm not out there to point out how they could be better. I'm not out there to point out how they could be this or that, or take better care of the environment or what have you. I think that these people are doing the very best that they can. I think that they are smart enough to know what is good for them, what is good for their communities, and what is good for their country. And they don't need so-called experts to tell them what to think. They don't really need experts to come by and say, oh, by the way, you need to do this better, or you need to do this or that thing in a different way, or you need to stop polluting the air. The list goes on and on and on. And I kind of think that more and more Americans are just getting tired of that. We're getting sick and tired of a number of things. One of them is this constant drumbeat of negativity, accusations, and attributing to us bad motivations, and all these put downs. I think a growing number of Americans are just getting tired of it. I think we're getting tired of the negativity. I know that I am. I'm also getting tired of the constant nonstop stream of lies and distortions and unfounded accusations that make up our, well, that fill the airwaves, that fill all of the media channels that we access or have access to. You know, I'm just getting tired of it. I'm not feeling very happy today. This is not a happy moment because I think we're in the midst of a political crisis in this country that is not going to resolve itself very soon. It's going to linger for some time, and maybe this gives us an opportunity to step back and say, okay, what exactly do we want out of our lives? What do we want as members of a country? What do we want as citizens of this great country of ours, the United States of America? What is it that we want? I would suggest that one of the things that, and this is not necessarily number one, but I would suggest, and I was thinking about this recently, I would suggest that what I want out of this thing that we call a citizen of the United States, I want the opportunity to exercise my ability to be innovative and creative. I want that opportunity. I want that ability to pursue something that, you know, floats my boat, that pursues something that is innovative and creative and refreshing and new and beneficial for large groups of people. I want the freedom to be able to write my books and not have them censored, not having the right credentials to get a publisher or what have you. I want the freedom to explore many, many ideas. Let me give you an example. I was at Dayton, Ohio, I think probably a couple years ago. I was attending a conference there. Actually, it was a symposium, and I was one of the guest speakers at this symposium that was being held in Dayton, Ohio, which is the birthplace of aviation. And we had an opportunity during that week to travel around, a kind of a guided tour of Dayton, Ohio, and narrated, of course. And we had a group of us signed up for this guided tour, and it included the Air Force Museum, but also included where the Wright brothers first did their development of the first flying machine, first heavier than air or first powered flying machine, how they built and tested the Wright flyer and stuff like that. And so as we were going around the city and in the surrounding area, the discussions and the narrations was that Dayton, Ohio was a hotbed of innovation. It just wasn't related to what the Wright brothers did. There were many, many different kinds of innovative ideas that were brought to fruition. There were many kinds of innovative things that were developed, and It was a vibrant community in terms of intellectual pursuits and innovation and creativity. And the discussions were, and some of the people that were talking about this that had some insight were trying to explain it in terms of how did this actually happen? How did this occur? What was it that in this place is a rather unusual place? It's kind of an unexpected place, a place where aviation started, manned flight in heavier than air, not balloon flight, but manned flight in heavier than air in a flying machine, powered by an engine. How did this happen? Did it just happen in isolation, or was it a product of an environment in which innovation was encouraged, innovation was applauded, innovation and creativity was something that was almost woven into the fabric of whatever culture you could identify as having existed and may very well still be in existence in Dayton, Ohio. And of course, we also went to the Air Force Museum, the National Museum of the Air Force, which is there at the birthplace of aviation, Dayton, Ohio. And we saw how humans were able to take what we learned about flying from the Wright brothers and their marvelous achievement at Kitty Hawk, what we learned from them, and how to take that knowledge into other realms of flight, other flying machines, other key aspects of aerodynamics and power plants and all kinds of things. And in a very short period of time, we're talking about from 1901, I think, if I don't really have my dates right, but I'm going to say that, or something in the early 1900s up to the present time. You know, humans have done amazing things in that particular area that we call aviation or aerospace, or however you want to describe it. But not just there. This is just one example of a place that was able to generate such enthusiasm for innovative ideas. I think that's the hallmark of America. I think that America is a proud nation that is first and foremost proud of its ability to do things, proud of its ability to consider doing things even better, proud of its ability to be creative in all kinds of ways, to be innovative, to experiment and to explore and to engage in wonder. I was at the hill. There was a hill in right outside of Dayton near a field where the Wright brothers used to launch their gliders from. It was a rather interesting place, and I went there on this tour, and I could see that the hill was about 300 or 400 feet high, and I could see envision them launching their gliders from this hill and letting the glider glide down to the hay field that existed at the bottom of this hill. And what occurred to me was this sense of wonder that they must have had to do such a thing and to continually refine their ideas and to explore and examine and consider various things that and do things that have never been done before. And to me, that's the beauty of America. I think what Tucker Carlson was talking about was when you look at over the crowd there in that field in Pennsylvania just a few days ago at the Trump rally, those are the people that make America work. Those are the workers. Those are the ones who get up every day and go out and work and produce something that is important, produce something that benefits yourself as well as others. And they're proud. These are proud craftsmen. These are proud professionals. These are proud people that are pursuing a particular vocation. These are all proud Americans. And his point was, okay, maybe what's missing in this equation is that we don't mention that to them. We don't tell them how good they are. We're constantly, if you see what's happening across the board in terms of what's going on socio-politically, we're constantly reminding these people how defective they are because they have allowed such and such to occur, instead of reminding them how important they are, how special they are. Are we looking for perfection? No, nobody is perfect. We're not even talking about that. That's for some ivory tower thinkers who don't really get out into the real world. We're talking about real world stuff. We're talking about hands-on. And we're talking about the ability, in spite of all kinds of challenges, the ability to build something useful, to build something important. We're talking about a country of doers. America is a country of doers, as well as a country of thought pioneers. And we take our ideas and we turn them into reality if you look at what we do. Now, that's very, very unusual. It doesn't happen very often. The Romans were able to do that, and the Americans are able to do that extremely well. And that's my takeaway from it. My great hope for America is that we get through this political crisis and we come out at the other end better off for having done the best thing that we can do under these very, very trying circumstances. What is the best thing that we can do for all concerned? That's the key here, and that's the key challenge facing all of us. And it looks like I am out of time, and we will see you all next week. Well, that went fast. So this is a close of another show, another Throttle Up. And before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here. And I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.